So I'm talking on Resurrection Sunday because it is. And that's nice because I don't have to really agonise over and pray about a message because God's got it there. And I love to just pray and just listen to songs and messages, especially songs that are just showing me the love of God, and I think we can get a lot out of those songs. That's why we wanted to have those songs this morning. Jesus paid it all. I mean, it just really sums up what he's done. And just to sing that over and over and just let it just soak in. You know, we come to God and we have a measure of faith. He gives us faith to believe. But we can always grow in that faith. And, you know, just listening to the songs that are, you know, scripturally accurate. Like, there's a lot that may not be accurate, but we've picked ones that are accurate with scripture and what God says. And that can really minister to your spirit and build your faith, because the main thing, the reason why we're here is that we want to grow, don't we? We want to grow in faith. We want to grow in our understanding of God, and we want to grow in our in the way that we express who he is in the world, because we're here as his disciples. We are his disciples now, and, you know, he named off 12, and there were lots of other people there, a lot of women actually. Lots and lots of women I've discovered in the last week, and at the trial, a lot of women were there. Lots of men ran away. I don't know about that. But lots of men were there, I suppose. But all the disciples ran away. Come on, the disciples that were named. But there were women disciples. But they hung around, the women. So you know, God is not a respecter of persons. That I've just been, as I've been just thinking about the resurrection, you know, he really wanted to show the world, you know what, like the society of the time, they rejected women, and they rejected women that weren't Jewish, most of all in the Jewish, you know, sect sort of thing. And the Samaritan woman, she was just totally rejected, and she even had to go to the well on her own to get water because no one would go with her because they're too ashamed to go with her. But Jesus sent the 12 disciples off to get lunch. Like, usually, you know, go and get some lunch, two of you. No, all of you go, just get. Because I want to talk to this woman now, and I want her to feel safe. You know, how amazing is God? Like, he does think of everything. He doesn't miss one thing out. And when he did stand up on, well, when he was up on the cross and he said, "It's finished," he's finished it. He showed the world how to live. He showed the world how to love. Just in that, I'm just gleaning on what he's done. And I want to start from Matthew. Actually, no, start from Mark. Mark chapter 15. I was just telling Jared, shall I tell him? This morning. See, usually when I'm preparing a message, I do it on my phone because I've got a Bible on my phone. but when I come to preach, I'd like to bring a big Bible. And, you know, I need the big, large letter now. I need that. I need it. But anyway, I'm running out the door and there on the bookcase, and I grabbed one of the leather-bound, like my Bibles are all leather-bound and, well, not all of them, but you know how they have the red leather. Anyway, grabbed it and put it in the car, and Nigel goes, "What you got that for?" And it was a photo album. Like, what? Stupid. Anyway, so that just means I have to just put these on. Well, I'd have to put them on anyway, but I've got to read these tiny little scriptures. Why do they make it so small? I don't know. Maybe to fit it all in a little book. Okay. So Mark chapter 15. Mark chapter 15. And we'll go from verse 40. Actually, no, don't go there. Go before that. We'll go from verse 21. A certain man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way in front of the in from the country, and they forced him to carry the cross. So this guy's just travelling through, and the whole thing of Jesus going to the cross is happening. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. You know, it was also the town rubbish dump. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. It was the third hour when they crucified him. Now, you know, the third hour, we think that's 3 o'clock, and actually it was 12. The third hour was 12? 9. They crucified him at 9 in the morning. I always thought it was 12. Well, anyway, let's just go there. But it says at 12, which would have been the sixth hour, that's when he breathed his last. And there was darkness came over the whole world. This is actually documented in history through non-Christians, like through historians, that there was this huge earthquake and this eclipse that had happened. But it wasn't, they couldn't describe how it could happen because of the lunar, because, you know, it's the full moon at Easter time, and that's when they had the Passover. There was no sort of scientific evidence of how that could happen, but it did happen. But the earthquake is actually recorded in history, which is quite significant. And in that earthquake, you know, people came out of the grave. Like, let's not just go, oh, yeah, people came up from the grave, and, like, this is, like, huge. No one is, once they're buried, comes out of a grave alive. And yet this is happening right there. For all of them to see. They saw it, those people, and not everyone believed. Can you believe that? That even though you saw these amazing miracles, they saw Jesus die, take his last breath, say, it is finished, sky's black, nothing. They said on some accounts that even the stars weren't, had lost their shine, and there was no, it was just completely black for 3 hours. And but in that time, people were coming out of the grave, and what a momentous, unbelievable occasion in history to actually be there. Maybe we'll talk to someone one day in heaven that were there. And we will, won't we, Heather? We'll go, what was it like? But I don't know if we'll be so amazed at, oh, what was it like? I mean, we will want to ask these questions, and we can for eternity, but the main thing that we'll be going is like, look at Jesus. We'll just be too overwhelmed with that, won't we, to even ask any sort of, you know, trivial questions about how did you feel, you know. But, you know, for us that love God, you know, that is the thing, that our hope is in Jesus, and that we will see him face to face. So they divided up his clothes. Where did I get to? It was the third hour when they crucified him. The written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified two robbers with him, one on his right and one on his left. You know, even all this is answering scripture from Old Testament times. Like, he was humiliated. He was even killed with people that were just total, you know, sinners, thieves and robbers. Aren't thieves robbers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was killed with, you know, he was killed with the worst. And so they're just saying, you know, you're as good as them. But we know he just endured that. He didn't even open his mouth when they were hurling insults and spitting in his face. And here it is. Those who passed by hurled insults at him. Why haven't I got my glasses on? That's why I can't see it. Shaking their heads and saying, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." So they're even mocking him right when he's bleeding out. And he's not recognisable as a human, it says in some accounts, that he was whipped to unrecognisable person. They wouldn't, like, he was just, I don't know if you've seen The Passion of the Christ, I think they sort of, it's quite horrible, that movie, but it's just sort of just show, you know, what he went through. In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves, and they said, "He saved others, but he can't save himself. Let this Christ, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross that we may see him and believe." Those crucified him with him also heaped insults on him. So you know how we hear about one of the guys on the cross. He says, "Remember me when you come into my kingdom." At first, it says they. So it wasn't just one of them hurling insults at Jesus. So at one point in those few hours, he's going, "Oh, he's just hurling insults at him." But then he comes to realise, hold on, one of them says, "Will you remember me when you come into your kingdom?" And he says, "You'll be with me today in paradise." What? I did nothing. I didn't even read my Bible. I mean, I'm going on today's thing, you know. I didn't apologise to everyone I hurt. I didn't make right the wrongs that I've done. I'm on the cross next year. How am I going to... No, today you'll be with me because you believe me. It's so simple to believe in Jesus and be saved, isn't it? But sometimes we make it so hard for everyone, including ourselves. We start to say, "Oh, this week I've had such a bad week. I've yelled at someone and I haven't been very kind, or, you know, I've done something wrong that, you know, everyone's going to see, oh, I'm just a bad Christian now. God doesn't love me anymore. God must be really mad with me. La, la, la." He's going, "Get up. Come on, get up. I've made you for more than this. You don't have to dwell in your guilt and shame anymore because I've saved you." This, and what an amazing example of that he says it to the guy and makes sure the people can hear. You know what? And because they all heard what he was saying to him on the cross, they heard the robbers screaming at him along with all the other people. But then he says, "I forgive you. You'll be with me in paradise because I see your heart." Because everyone else would have seen the change in the guy's heart. They would have seen him go, "Oh, hold on, this guy really is the Son of God." I mean, he is so amazing. And he even calls out to his mum. Can't imagine watching your son die on the cross. I mean, we can't even fathom our kids getting sick and having to go in the hospital and have wires all over them, you know, like tubes up their nose. That's just shocking and quite traumatizing for us, you know, in our day and age, but to just see, you can't even recognise them, and they're still there, crying out and saying, look after my mum, look after her. He's amazing, isn't he? I'm not going to cry. It's all right, I cry all the time. You know what I heard? I've been listening to a lot of messages on this, and I love this part that Timothy Keller brought out in about the tree. You know, it says in 1 Peter, in Acts, in Galatians 3, we can go there. You can so you believe me. Galatians 3. Or even 1 Peter, Acts 5:20 is good. I'm going to Acts 5:20 now. Sorry. But it says the same thing. So this is Peter saying, we must obey God rather than men. The God of our fathers raised Jesus from the dead, whom you had killed by hanging him on a tree. See, and in these other scriptures, in 1 Peter, in Acts, as we've read, and in Galatians, it talks about how he was hung on a tree. And so many people get all caught up with that. Oh, it was a real tree. It was a tree. But they said that on purpose. They wanted to, because he's talking to the leaders of the Jewish community, and they understand what happened in Genesis. And so they're just saying, you hung him on a tree. And you see, in Eden, God said to Adam and Eve, obey me and don't eat the tree. And what did they do? They didn't obey him. But Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane and he's crying out to God, help me, help me. But not my will, God, your will be done. So he's in the Garden of Gethsemane. And God says, Jesus, obey me about the tree, the cross. And he did. He did obey. He's our second Adam, you see. Because the first Adam, who we all came through, he didn't obey. And we were born into sin from that time. But Jesus comes along and he says, I'm going to change it all. I'm instead of, you know, God had said in Eden, obey me about the tree and you'll live forever. And they didn't. But Jesus went and obeyed God about the tree, but he had to die. But that's so we could live forever. Wow. Like, don't ever think that you're reading through the Old Testament, and Nigel's bringing it out wonderfully, just about how there's an image, there's a metaphor about, even if you go through Deuteronomy and it just sort of goes through all the rituals and everything, everything points to Jesus. Everything. Even the cloth you were talking about a few weeks ago. Yeah, and the linen crossed with the cotton or something, I don't know. But listen to it online if you want. But everything points to Jesus. He's paid it all, just like we sang this morning. Can we go to Matthew 28 now? And that goes through to what happened after. And I know we know these stories, but gosh, we've got to read them over and over, and just there's always something new that God will show you as you read the scriptures. Because his word is alive, isn't it? It's not a dead word. It's not just like said for effect or to impress, God has actually written these words to impact our lives and change us. If we go to Matthew 28, verse 1. Oh, so it was the sixth hour to the ninth hour. If you go in Matthew 27, from the sixth hour to the ninth hour, darkness came over all the land. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? You see, God, to complete this whole transaction of getting us out of hell, he had to turn away from Jesus as well, because he actually put everything, all the sin of the whole world, onto Jesus. And you know that God is a holy God and he cannot look at sin. And so he turned away from Jesus. When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a stick and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." Well, they had no idea what was going to happen next, did they? And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, this is quite hugely significant for the Jewish community. You know, there's this curtain, right, in the Holy of Holies. Do you know the Holy of Holies and the temple and everything? Quite everything was a symbol and points to Jesus. But there was this curtain, right? There was the outer place and then there's the holy place. Well, I think they got the outer place, outer temple, I don't know. But there was the holy place where some of the Levites could come, some of the rabbi. But there was the Holy of Holies, and it was behind this thick curtain. Now, this curtain wasn't just like, you know, our curtains. It was 1 foot thick. So in there was the ark and the cherubim and there was there was some manna in there. I think they saved that in there too from the time of the Exodus. It was all in this Holy of Holies place. And no one could go in there. Oh, they sent one person in there once a year, as you know, some of them you know. And they would have tassels on the end of the rabbi's clothes with bells on it and a rope tied around his waist. So when he did go in there once a year after he'd done all the cleansing and everything, and if he wasn't pure enough, he might just die in there and they'd have to pull him out by the rope. Like, this is huge. So they would not even... Like, there's not people that were even allowed in the most holy place, not in the Holy of Holies, let alone, you know. So to go into the temple, even in the temple courts, I don't think women were even allowed in there. I think they're in the outer courts, maybe. No, they didn't even get in. Anyway, so this is quite significant for them to see this. He says, at that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. So it tore from the top, not from the bottom. So no, even God said, you know, everyone will probably think that someone's got some scissors and cut it at the bottom. Well, not really. You can't cut a 1 foot thing. God wanted to show that he is made a way through now into the Holy of Holies. It's quite significant. The earth shook and the rocks split. The tombs broke open and the bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs and after Jesus' resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many people. Oh, wow. You know, it's just amazing. What did they get, have a wash or something before they did that? You know, they would have been wrapped in these cloths, you know, burial clothes. I suppose they did fragrance them, didn't they? But they still, would they have had a stink about them? They would have been resurrected bodies, so they wouldn't have stunk because there was no sin. Yeah. When the centurion and those with him were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened there, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." This guy, the soldier, suddenly is a believer. Suddenly, he's the Son of God. I believe. He's it. He's the one. Many women were there. There it is. There it is. Women. Many women were there. Now, why didn't they say many men and women were there? No, because there was many women. Many women were there watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James, and Jozo. That was my maiden name, Josling. Jozes. And the mother of Zebedee's sons. The burial of Jesus. As evening approached, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who had himself become a disciple of Jesus. Going to Pilate, he asked for Jesus' body, and Pilate ordered that it be given to him. Joseph took the body, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and placed it in his own new tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance to the tomb and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there opposite the tomb. So they waited there. You know, I've also read, and I don't know the source that I got it from, but, you know, at the cross, when he's on the cross and there's all the crowds around him, a lot of people were scared of, if you knew of Jesus, that they might be captured and killed as well. And that's why a lot of them ran away, because they were scared they were going to be connected to him. Obviously, we know that because Peter said, "No, I don't know him," and denied him. But, you know, it's people think, oh, yeah, the women were there because they're not scared of being crucified. Well, actually, I read this some source. Can't remember where. But women were crucified. They were, at that time, they were totally susceptible to being, like, treated just like the men were, in terms of, oh, you know him, right, come here, I'll flog you too, you know. So they went there in fear, but their love was much stronger. And it doesn't mean that the men didn't love them, but they were fearful, their fear had overtaken them. But, you know, there was these women there just loving on him and just staying with him. There were men there too, obviously, because there would have been crowds of them watching. So, he got buried in this tomb. And they put this big rock over the front of it. Because the soldiers were really worried that someone was going to steal his body and then, you know, make a big play of it. So I'll read that. The next day, one after preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate and said, "Sir, that we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I'll rise again.' So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal his body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first." "Well, take a guard," Pilate answered. "Go and make a tomb as secure as you know how." Make the tomb as secure. So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. So there was a stone, but there was also a seal. So I don't know what sort of seal there would have been. Something that can't be broken at all, maybe easily. I don't know. Maybe And there was also guards. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to the tomb. there was a violent earthquake, another one. For an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. Like, God's got a sense of humour. Like, here you go. I'll get my angel to sit on it. Hey, you thought it was sealed? His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and they became like dead men. So they actually fainted there, these guards. They were terrified. Well, wouldn't you be? It's an angel, and the angels aren't small. About 9 foot on some accounts of people saying things about them. I don't know. Is that written down how big they were? Well, some of them are in Revelation. The angel said to the women, "Don't be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen. Just as he said, come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples he has risen from the dead and he's going on ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I've told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. So they knew who he was. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." So this is just amazing, you know. He was around, and this is Matthew's account, but he was around for a time, and he met with people, and he, you know, walked through walls as well, as on some accounts. I think that's in Luke. How he walked in and saw the disciples, and Thomas was like, "Whoa, but I don't know, I'm still doubting, unless I can put my fingers in your scar, where the nails have been, I won't believe." And he says, "Well, here you go, here's my hands and my feet." You know, he went out and he ate with them. He ate fish, and he wasn't just a ghost of a body, he had a body. But it was a resurrected body. It was better than this one. And that's the promise. He wanted to show us, but he wanted to show us, you know what? You're getting a body, but it's not like your old one. It's not broken. It's not diseased. It's not even prone to disease. It's not like, oh, you know, I've been well for a while, but, you know, hope I don't get the flu, or, you know, and we vaccinate against stuff. But this body that we're going to get is a resurrected body. It's better than we've ever seen, than we can ever imagine. And we can eat, but we don't have to eat, I don't think. But it's going to be an amazing new body that we have. And he says at the end of Matthew, and you know this pretty well, but I'll read it. "Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some still doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age.'" You know, and then he went up in the clouds and they all watched him. His body went up into the heavens. And we can't fathom that. Like, how far did they... They just watched him go into the clouds, I suppose, until they couldn't see him anymore. And go, "Oh, wow." And then he said, "Just wait, I'm going to send your helper, which is the Holy Spirit." And we know of that, which is amazing, because right now, right here, right now, Jesus is with us. He's with us. He says, I've made a way. I broke that curtain that stopped you from talking to me talking to you, having a relationship with you. Now it's complete. It's finished. I live inside of you. You're in me. We're in him. You know, and there's no better hope that we could have in this entire world. Imagine just being at that pinnacle of time and just realizing that there's this huge hope now that they have, which is what happened. And the disciples were just filled with boldness and proclaimed his word and were ready to die, even upside down on a cross, because they didn't want to be... didn't want to dishonor God by even being hung the same way he did. And I think that was it Peter that was hung upside down on a cross? Yeah. Just amazing faith. And, you know, he says, I've given you that faith too. And so, you know, I said at the beginning that we start with this small bit of faith that, yes, Jesus died for my sin. And he's cleaned me on the inside. He's washed me white as snow. That might be all that you know at this stage of your life. All you know is Jesus has paid the way for me to be living eternally. But there's so much more to him that we need to know and understand about him, and we'll never know everything. But you know, the way that we learn about him and grow is by being under his word, listening to his word, and getting together. We learn so much from each other, don't we? And it's we learn about his love and his grace, and even seeing when people are unkind or when there's a dispute and an offence, and how God remedies that through us forgiving and making it right, then God's love shines through. And, you know, you might be going through something right now where you're just struggling with irritation and pain or trauma about something or a relationship. But, you know, God is our hope. God is the one that can make it just totally different. He's the one that can mend those relationships that are broken. And we can try a bit, but it all falls to nothing. You know, God is the God of hope. And he's the God of the resurrection. He can resurrect dead bones, dead stuff. He says, watch this. Right when you think I'm totally powerless on the cross, watch. I've raised these people from the dead. And he can raise things that you've just given up in your heart, you know, as dead, as just hopeless. He can change that. And that's my hope, because there's a lot of things that I'm hoping for. But our hope is in him, that one day we will see him. And even in that, he does help us with our troubles. He says he'll be with you to the very end of the age.